And the sirens begin. Hello, everyone. Did you miss me? I missed you. It's been hours now. What a good day yesterday, though. The first day, 1 week ago, was so wonderful. All of Mansfield was here. There was just something special that day. God's spirit was alive. And of course, all the leftover food from Night to Be Much Observed didn't hurt either. But yesterday was equally good. It took a while to get there. But wasn't it fun to be together with other congregations for the first time since before COVID? It was very enjoyable talking to people I hadn't seen in that time. It was a great day. We enjoyed the services. We enjoyed the setting. People could go out for walks, and the food was wonderful. Time for lunch came, and we had signed up for the catered lunch, and they called out senior citizen first. And I thought, all my dreams have come true. Because what other good reason is there to live for 69 years if you can't get a break in the lunch line? I should be embarrassed, but I'm proud to say I was first in line. And they did not ask for my AARP card, which I carry. It was great. And of course, we did, you know, we learned a lot yesterday, and we sang together, and we prayed together, and we learned together. But one of the most enjoyable things for me was just seeing people and just having time to talk to people and learn what their lives have been like, and seeing that they're doing fine without me. The people are moving along, and of course there have been trials for people, and not everybody's with us anymore. It's been a hard 2 years, but it was a good day. And you've spent a lot of time sitting, I understand that. And there aren't many scriptures today. It'll be scriptural and it'll be biblical. But this is more of a continuation of me talking to my family, talking about our church family and personalities that have been in it both today and over the years. When we went to Australia a few years ago, I think it was 5 years ago, it doesn't seem that long, but on our way back at the airport, we were kind of, you know, we'd been to the feast and we were kind of, oh, okay, you know, we're a little sad. First of all, I had to drive on the left side of the road back to the airport, and it was my first real solo trip without guidance and stuff, so that was quite an adventure. And we finally got there and breathed a sigh of relief and got to the airport, but we were a little down because we'd had a wonderful time. And there was a young man there at our gate, and he was American, so it made sense that we were on the same flight, flying back to Los Angeles. And it was nice to see him. It was like having a little taste of what had gone before. And he said, oh, yeah, what a great feast, the bro feast. I said, what? He said, oh, it was a bro feast. And I said, you're going to have to explain that one to me. And we had gone over there because we were I'd met him once. But there was a man there named Jeff Robertson. And he's quite a musician. He actually sang on our feast video that year, for which I wrote the music. So we were collaborators before we actually were in Australia together. But it seemed over the week we really enjoyed each other's company and our families. We enjoyed his family and our wives, and we had a good time together. But he was always introducing me, or I was always appearing on stage with him, and that's what this young man was referring to. And apparently, it had something to do with the tenor of the feast, was that, you know, there was this international friendship, and we were kind of celebrating it on stage that week, it seemed like, to him. So friendships can have an influence on other people. You know, God and Jesus Christ, they're one, but they're two, and they are friends. They love each other deeply, and it's their friendship that fires everything that's gone on since the whole creation of the world. You know, the love that they show us today. When I pray, I say, I hope you two really enjoy each other, you know? Your love is what keeps things going. It's the energy, the flame. Everything that we do is because of that, and I hope we can live up to it and reflect it and be part of that. So that friendship adds immense energy to the whole world and to our spiritual lives. I remember back in the days of Cleveland West, long enough ago that we had a Cleveland West Church and a Cleveland East Church, and many of you were there, you would probably remember, we had two deacons who were very good friends. It was happened, well, I won't say their names because we might end up on YouTube, but you know who I'm talking about. And they were both, one was a mechanic and one was a farmer, but when I say that, it makes them sound like hicks, and they kind of were, but they weren't really. They loved God's way, they had good families, they laughed a lot together, they gave sermonettes, they spoke, they led at various things, and they weren't always friends, but most of the time they were. They weren't perfect people. But when I think back to Cleveland West, I often think of that friendship and how much it powered things. Well, when you think of friendships in the Bible, of course, you think of friendships like David and Jonathan, who were the picture of friendship. Or you think of perhaps Jesus Christ himself and his cousin John, who were very close. I mean, John is written about by himself as the disciple whom Jesus loved, and at that last Passover he was reclining next to Jesus, and it seems from the description that he was leaning on him, that they were good enough friends. But I want to talk about a relationship. This is our family. I want to talk about two men who had a much more complicated and very interesting friendship. These two men are our brothers, although they've both been dead for a couple thousand years, and their imperfections are pointed out in a lot of places in the Bible, and it seems that even though they work together a lot, that they really annoyed each other a lot of the time. There's a lot of evidence for that. And I'm talking about the Apostle John and the Apostle Peter, who were together for a lot of their lives and worked together and accomplished great things, and we still talk about them. Let's consider them on their own to start with. Simon, of course, was a fisherman. He was apparently a rough-hewn, rugged, loud type. He's the one that we know who was married. I'm assuming that some of the other disciples were also married as time went by, but he's the one we know was married because we learn about his mother-in-law. We never hear about his wife except in one place where Paul says, well, you know, Cephas gets to travel with his wife. We should be able to do these things. And so we know that Cephas, which is another name for Peter, was married. His name actually, he was named after one of the 12 sons of Israel. His name was really Simeon. We read that as Simon. It was a common name for the day. And, of course, Jesus renamed him, as we'll find. We know him as Peter. We talk about him as Peter. But he was the first instance we know of where the word Peter, Petros, was used. How many of you know somebody named Wendy? Wendy is an interesting name in that it comes from Peter Pan. J. Barry, who wrote Peter Pan, made up the name Wendy. So everybody you know named Wendy, I live one block away from Wendy Drive in Berea, and everybody you know named Wendy was named after James Berry came up with that name. Well, everybody you know named Peter has been named ever since Jesus Christ gave that name to this man. Of course, Jesus used the word Cephas, and we don't really know what Jesus called him because we have the Greek version, Petros, and it seems like Paul used both names, Cephas and Petros, but they mean the same thing. They mean rock, and I know we talk a lot about the nuances of that, but this is not a day for nuances. It meant rock. We'll just go with that. And then John and his brother James seem to have been cousins of Jesus. They were also fishermen, but they seemed to be a different kind of personality. Their mother was probably Salome, and I say probably because there's various verses in the New Testament, and I'd be happy to show them to you, where at one point we have the mother of James and John standing next to Jesus' mother, Mary, and at another point we have Mary's sister, Salome, standing next to her, and we infer that they're the same. They might not be. We'll find out when we talk to John in the world tomorrow, but it does look like they were very close, and it does look like that they were cousins. The James and Peter and John were only three people among the group of 12, but even of those three, Simon, James, and John, it seems like John and Peter were a twosome. They often stood out. And over the years, it turns out they had a lot in common. The first encounter we have with Peter is a very interesting one, and we know it because, of all people, John tells us about it. And this is in John 1, the first chapter of John, and in verse 35. And there's a lot of interesting things happen in this short little account. John 1, starting in verse 35, and when we talk about John here, we're actually talking about John the Baptist, who was another distant relative of Jesus here. So some of these people knew each other before these events. But in verse 35, the next day, John the Baptist, was there again with two of his disciples. When he saw Jesus passing by, he said, "Look, the Lamb of God." When the two disciples heard him say this, they followed Jesus. Turning around, Jesus saw them following and asked, "What do you want?" And they said, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" Which probably wasn't what they really wanted to ask him, but it's probably what came out of their mouths. You know how it is when you're put on the spot. They probably didn't expect him to ask him. And he told them where, and they went and they saw where he was staying, and they sat on his deck for the rest of the afternoon, it says. It says they spent the day with him, but he was a carpenter. Maybe it was a deck. Who knows? And it was about the 10th hour. Well, one of those people was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. And Andrew, of course, was a person with his own stories and does have a lot to do with, he appears in the Gospels a number of times. We do know a few things about him. But in this instance, his main purpose is to be Simon Peter's brother and to introduce Simon to Jesus. Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who heard that John had said what John had said and who followed Jesus. And another interesting speculation here, but it's only a speculation, is that other disciple might have been John, the cousin of Jesus, because John had a coy way of not referring to himself when he wrote about himself. We don't know that. We do know that it was Andrew, and we do know that it was Simon Peter. So, in verse 41, the first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon and tell him, "We have found the Messiah, that is, the Christ." And he brought him to Jesus. And at that point, Jesus looked at him and said, and this is a very strange thing for a person to say as the first thing they say to a person, "You are Simon, son of John. You will be called Cephas." I mean, what if you met me today for the first time and you said, "My name is Joe," and I said, "You shall be called Obi-Wan from now on." You know what I mean? It's quite a change at that point. And you know, they did have a good relationship after that, but that's how that started, which is just kind of weird, which, when translated, is Petros, or Peter. Well, then we have an encounter in the book of Mark, and the book of Mark, there's reason to think that the writing of the book of Mark was written by John Mark, but there's reason to think that it was guided and had heavy influence from Peter. Regardless, let's look at this story in the first chapter of Mark, starting in chapter 14. After John was put in prison, so these are after the days where Andrew went and got Peter and introduced him to Jesus, because that's John the Baptist, Jesus went into Galilee proclaiming the good news of God. So before, he'd been being baptized, but he hadn't really plunged into his ministry yet at that point. But now, he says very clearly, the time has come. So he's starting. The kingdom of God is near. Repent and believe the good news, which was a continuation of John the Baptist's message. As Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee, so that gives us the location, he saw Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Well, you know, sometimes this is presented as their first meeting. Jesus sees them and says, "Follow me," and they jump out of their boat. But we know that they'd actually met each other before. And they may have gotten to know each other quite well before this day, but this was a day when Jesus was starting the family business, the firm at this point. And he needed people, and he knew where to find them. So he saw Simon and his brother Andrew, and he said, "Come, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." At once they left their nets and followed him. When he had gone a little further, same shoreline, He encountered another boat, and he saw James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John in a boat preparing their nets. So he saw his cousins. Well, Peter's here. James and John and Zebedee are here. They were competitors. They were fishermen, but they, when it came to marketing their stuff, they were competitors. I'm sure they worked together in various things, and they knew their trade, and they probably learned from each other, but started out, they were on the same beach, and they were competitors. Verse 20, without delay, he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired men and followed him. So Zebedee had a crew, and I have to think at this point, you know, I've often thought of Zebedee. Here comes Jesus Christ, sinless, perfect, and he says, I want your workers, come with me, I'll make you fishers of men. Well, that's all well and good if you're fishing for men, but if you're sitting on a boat and your sons are the main part of your crew and they run off with your nephew, what does Zebedee think at this point? And I have to think that Zebedee had considered this day beforehand. There were other men in the boat working. He had a crew still, and he knew Jesus, and he knew James, and he knew John, and he knew that there was already a relationship there. And he probably suspected that this day would come. You know, he would talk to Mary. Mary knew quite a bit. Mary had talked to Elizabeth and Zechariah. They had talked about all kinds of things. This was not, you know, someone who'd grown up with a normal childhood. There were all kinds of stories. And by this time, I really think that Zebedee had considered this day before. Well, of course, Jesus goes on to do his work. He calls a total of 12 men to be his disciples. There were many more who followed him and who traveled around with him, it seems. But these two men, Simon, Peter, I'll just call them Peter from now on, Peter and John, stand out in the stories at this point. And, you know, he's already said to Peter, you shall be Rock. Your name is Rock. And he'd already singled Peter out at this point. Of course, John and he were already good friends. That just didn't come out of nowhere. I think one of the blessings that God the Father gave Jesus Christ on earth was he didn't get married. He didn't have children. But he had a very good friend who was his cousin, who knew him from birth and who knew the oddities of his growing up and who supported him and who laughed with him and who wrestled with him when they were kids and, you know, did all kinds of things together, got soaking wet, probably fished together, did all kinds of things, and God gave him that friendship. But we do see Peter, James, and John singled out as a trio, and often we see Peter and John singled out without James. One of the incidences in Mark 5, and you can read it on your own. You already know the story, I'm sure, because a lot of these things are stories from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John that you've already read. When the daughter of Jairus, the temple official, was raised from the dead, Jesus closed the door on everyone else, but he brought in Peter, James, and John. He wanted them to have that in their memories. Why he didn't want the other nine to, well, it was a crowded room. And if you were resurrecting a little girl and there's 13 men standing over her, she'd probably close her eyes again. You know, after she said, I've been somewhere beautiful and I want to go back. And theologically, that's wrong. I'm sorry I said that. But there were four men in there, and that was enough to scare her back to life, apparently. When they are at the house of the high priest, after Jesus has been taken prisoner, it's Peter and John who are there. And John is only mentioned as the other disciple, but it's fairly easy to tell from what they said that John was there. And one of the points of that is John heard Peter deny Christ three times. And that comes back to haunt them. At the Transfiguration, where Jesus talked with Moses and Elijah and was transformed with shining light, he took three men with him on that journey, which took days. So he left a lot of the world behind at that point, but he wanted Peter, James, and John to have this very much in their mind. Did Jesus know that James wouldn't live very long past Jesus' own death? Who knows? James was the shortest lived of those three, and after he died, of course, it was just Peter and John with those memories, those eyewitness memories at that point. When he went to the Garden of Gethsemane, he took all the disciples, but then he went aside with Peter, James, and John. These were people whose presence meant a lot to him. And the fact that they slept through him in his trials means that he really just wanted them there. They didn't really help him at all. But it meant something to him to have those three men there, regardless. When Mary Magdalene finds the tomb after Jesus has risen, when she finds it empty, who does she run to tell? Peter and John. And the implication is that Peter and John were together somewhere. So they had put aside some of their differences. Why do I say that they spent a lot of their time being annoyed with each other? Well, let's look at the evidence. In Mark 3 and 17, verse 17. And remember, this book has Peter's stamp all over it, even though it was written by John Mark. When you read in Mark 3 and verse 17, it's just naming the 12 disciples, and actually uses the word apostles there too, and he trained them to send them out to preach and to give them authority to drive out demons. Well, these are the 12. Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter, he wanted that in print. James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John, to whom he gave the name Boanerges, which means sons of thunder. Now, what's that about? And why didn't John mention that in his own gospel? Because it's not really a compliment. It's making fun of James and John, which their cousin could do and which Peter could remember. If you turn to Luke 9, and we'll call Luke an impartial writer at this point, giving us a little more on this story, Luke 9 and verses 51 to 56, John the apostle, who's pictured at the Last Supper in frescoes, which don't need to be accurate at all, you know, is vaguely effeminate and gentle and the one who leans on Jesus, and he's just a nice guy. Well, that John doesn't show up in this story. Where was I? Luke 9, 51. As the time approached for him to be taken up to heaven, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. And he sent messengers on ahead who went into a Samaritan village to get things ready for him. But the people there did not welcome him because he was heading for Jerusalem. You know, there was a lifelong friction there. When the disciples, James and John, saw this, that Jesus wasn't treated very well by them, I mean, they knew that he was the Messiah at that point. It was at that point of his ministry. They saw how he was being treated, and they said, Lord, do you want us to call down fire from heaven to destroy them? I mean, would that even occur to you? Number one, that you had that power, but they were kind of glorying in the fact that they had a little power, apparently, over the spirit world at this point. They'd been given authority to cast out demons. They'd seen many things happen. They said, do you want us to call fire down from heaven to destroy them? Well, Jesus quickly rebuked them, and they went to another village. But that's where they get their name, Sons of Thunder, because they were a little more bark than they were bite, and they tended to be a bit headstrong and a bit, at least in their thoughts, a bit violent. When John's mother, who we are saying was Salome, approached Jesus in Matthew chapter 20 with a question that just, again, wouldn't occur to me. In John Matthew chapter 20, and starting in verse 20, then the mother of Zebedee's sons, so this is James and John's mother, came to Jesus with her sons and, kneeling down, asked a favor of him. What is it you want? He asked. And he probably thought she wanted to go first through the potluck line on the day of unleavened bread. And she said, oh, nothing really. Just grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right and the other at your left in the kingdom. Smile, smile, smile. Well, you know, John had already heard Jesus say at this point that Peter was the rock on whom he would build his church. And again, that has other implications, but we just take the words at face value at that point. And was John in on this? Well, they seemed to sort of be. James and John kind of seemed to know what was going on. Jesus said, you don't know what you're asking. And he turns to the disciples, because he's treating them as a threesome at this point. They're all in it together. He said, can you drink the cup I am going to drink? We can, they answered. Jesus said to them, you will indeed drink from my cup, but that's not a blessing, as he says it, but to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. Those places belong to those for whom they have been prepared by my Father. When the 10 heard about this, They were just like you. They were indignant. Wouldn't you be indignant if somebody came up to Jesus and said, if you don't mind, could I just be in charge of all these other people in the world tomorrow? Well, Peter heard this. He was one of the ten. This was not something that built brotherly love among the disciples. Well, Jesus, of course, used it as a teaching experience and explained to them that the rulers of Gentiles lorded over them and their high officials exercise authority, and not so with you. And he echoed that at that last Passover meal, too. He said, you have to be servants. So he put a spin on it that made it part of his own work and hopefully taught an eternal lesson. But it had to have created a rift between those two and the others, and they knew they were doing it at the time. So John earns the full-fledged annoying medal. He got it. Also, he's described, and of course this could be humility too, he's described in his own writings as the disciple whom Jesus loved. Now, that's quite a thing to claim. Apparently, it was quite true. Peter probably never read his writings. But, it was obvious anyway, before John ever wrote a word, that John had rabbi's pet status at that point, that he was very close to Jesus. And Peter knew that. So there must have been a little bit of thought about that. In Matthew chapter 16, this is jumping into a big event, but these are where the words are spoken. In Matthew 16, starting in verse 13, Jesus, he's nearing the last part of his ministry on earth. And when Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he said to his disciples, who do people say that the Son of Man is? Jesus knew who the Son of Man was. He's asking for support here from his friends. He's under a lot of stress. He knows what lies ahead of him at this point. He wants support from people. And they replied, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others, Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. He said, no. He said, I'm talking about you. What do you think? And Simon Peter said, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God, which is absolutely amazing. And as they say on the internet, he nailed it. Verse 17, Jesus said, well, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah. For this was not revealed to you by man, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and that the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give to you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. And he warned his disciples not to tell anyone else that this was the Christ. He was just talking to them personally at this point. Well, that's quite a thing to hear. They all heard it. They heard that Peter would be a foundation of sorts for the New Testament church at that point. I get a little jealous of him at this point, too, because when I think of keys, I think of piano tuners. And I think, why does he get the keys? I should be the person with the keys, you know. But it was Peter. And John must have heard that and thought, okay, Peter's got it over me. In Luke 22 and verse 24, right there towards the end, they're at the Last Supper, and a dispute arose among them. Hadn't they learned anything? They've been through this exact thing before, as to which of them was considered the greatest. And Jesus probably sat there and thought, nobody gets me. Nobody, nobody, nobody. I've already taught this one. He said the kings of the Gentiles lorded over them. But they're still arguing. So it meant something to John and to Peter. They were human beings, and they cared who was in charge at that point. You remember after that Peter turns right at that point to Peter. Jesus turns to Peter and said, look, Satan has asked that you be tested and you be sifted. So it is only because of me that you're going to withstand all this. And when you do, when your faith is strengthened, help all these other people. And the other people heard that too. And it sounds like he's praising him. But remember, this is the same Peter that Jesus said, get thee behind me, Satan, too. Not too long before. So it was an up and down kind of thing. I think my favorite part, and this I've already told a few people about, is in John 20. Mr. Thomas read this in his sermon yesterday, and I was giggling in the row three. Not in Mr. Thomas' sermon, it was fine, but I love this part. John 20. Yes, we're in a story, but we're only going to talk about a little bit here. The Mary Magdalene went to the tomb, saw that the stone had been removed. She ran to Simon Peter and the other disciple, etc., etc. Verse 3. So Peter and the other disciple started for the tomb. Both were running, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. So they get there, and John turns to Peter, and he says, I won. And Peter said, like anyone is going to know. And John said, everyone's going to know. And who wrote this? You know, I don't think if Peter had won the race that John would have casually said, and the other disciple got there first. I love this part. And we all know, whatever we know about John and Peter, we know that John outran Peter to the tomb. It actually matters because John stopped. John saw things, but Peter was the one who went in. They had different approaches to things. But remember that after they both followed Jesus around in his imprisonment, but it was John who was at the foot of the cross. And there's no other apostles mentioned at that point. And that's when Jesus turned to John and said, you know, here's your new mother. And he turned to his mother and said, and here's your new son. And then it all culminates, of course, you know the events, but it all culminates in John 21. One of the last things we know about them, and one of their last interactions that we know while Jesus was still on earth. Jesus appeared to his disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, and of course it was this time of year, this wonderful time of year that Mr. Thomas explained to us is a bridge that connects the days of unleavened bread to the Feast of Pentecost. In Ohio we call it spring, and it's a wonderful time, isn't it? Mostly. It's a wonderful time. All right, the good weather always seems to come on Sabbaths when we stand inside, but we'll go outside today. Afterwards, Jesus appeared, and it happened this way. And here's a bunch of disciples who didn't know what to do, and it names them, and they're all going fishing. Simon Peter says that. He says, I'm going out to fish. What else do we have to do? And they said, well, we'll go with you. And notice that John and James were with him. So they went out, got into the boat that night, caught nothing. You know, Jesus Christ shows up, says, put your nets in on the other side. And they did, and they caught a lot of fish. And then it occurred to John and Peter that they'd heard this before, and they realized that it was Jesus Christ. Peter jumped in the water, which was a very Peter thing to do, and Jesus fixed them breakfast. And nobody said, who are you? Because they all knew at this point. Well, then there's the famous walk. And verse 15, when they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these? And they were walking along the beach. And bear in mind, we all know at this point that Peter had denied Jesus three times and that I can't see any other way, but that he felt terrible about it, that he felt like he'd betrayed this person. And here he is living again. It's bad enough that he had him killed or led up to that, but here they are again, and he knows that Jesus knows. Jesus had actually predicted it, and Jesus did a lot to bolster Peter at this point. He said, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And they go through it two more times. And Jesus said, and bear in mind, this is John who is writing this, I tell you the truth, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And then he said to him, follow me. So three times he bolstered Peter's confidence. He gave him a little bit of guidance about the future, but he said, follow me, that's your job. Well, Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them at that point. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and had said, Lord, who's going to betray you? And when Peter saw him, the old feelings came back, like a family reunion, you know. He said, Lord, what about him? Because he just said to Peter, you know, what would happen to him? And he said, take care of my sheep, take care of my lambs. And he said, but him. And Jesus said, well, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You have to follow me. In other words, your following me doesn't have to do with him. You both follow me. You both have jobs to do. And, you know, he could have said, oh, you know, come here, John. You guys hug each other. Come on. And he didn't. As if anything, he fed that little competition there. But remember that who wrote these words? John wrote these words, and the only way John could know about a private conversation between Peter and Jesus was if Peter told him about this conversation. So there is reason to think that they both grew up at this point and that they both put it aside. And John even says this is the disciple who testifies to these things and who wrote down that they were true. Well, let's turn to Acts 3. And in Acts 3, there's a new Peter and John. Remember that on the day of Pentecost, Peter was the one who gave them the powerful sermon that led to the baptism of thousands of people. The best sermons I've ever heard have never led to that. It was an incredible day. So Peter's already helping establish the church with the help of 11 other men and 120 other people to address the envelopes and put the stamps on them and mail them out. And Peter, in chapter 3, one day Peter and John were going up to the temple at the time of prayer, all three in the afternoon. They saw a man crippled from birth who was being carried to the temple gate called Beautiful, where he was put every day to beg from those going on into the temple courts. When he saw Peter and John about to enter, he asked them for money. Peter looked straight at him, as did John, and Peter said, "Look at us. Look." And so the man gave them his attention, expecting to get something. And Peter said, "Silver and gold I do not have, but what I have I give you. In the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, walk." And taking him by the right hand, he helped him up. And instantly, the man's feet and ankles became strong. He jumped to his feet and began to walk. And then he went with him into the temple courts, walking and jumping and praising God. When all the people saw him walking and praising God, they recognized him as the same man. So there was this wonderful, wonderful thing going on. In verse 11, it mentions that he was holding on to Peter and John. And they were all astonished. So there were two miracles worked here. There was the incredible miracle of the man walking, but there was also the miracle that Peter and John were working as a team. And although they weren't together the whole time after, it seems like they went different ways. They supported each other from that time on. We don't actually know what happened. There are things we do know about. They both became leaders in the church. They both went on to write, as we know. And people say Peter couldn't have written those things. He was an ignorant fisherman. But we have two books in the Bible that have Peter's name on them. And as I said, it seems like, okay, so he couldn't write. So he had other people write them for him. So he had Mark write the Gospel of Mark, but had his own influence on him. He tangled with Simon Magus. Apparently Simon Magus went to Rome. That's the tradition. We don't really know that. But Peter seems to have gone to Rome to battle that kind of thing. And he wrote at least one of his letters from Rome. But interestingly enough, you know, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's a group in Rome who say that Peter started their church. Well, Peter, in his letter, refers to the whole city of Rome as Babylon. He was not crazy about the place, and he didn't like what was going on there. And that's his little clue to us down the thousands of years, that he wasn't part of that. That's the clue that he left us. John, this was particularly meaningful, by the way, that he'd gone to Rome because it was a center of Gentile Christians. And as you remember, Paul accused Peter of hypocrisy in that department, that he tended to favor Jews over Gentiles. And Paul even says, you know, I'm the apostle to the Gentiles, Peter's to the Jews. But at this point, Peter was thoroughly, there was a Jewish population there, but he was thoroughly immersed in a Gentile congregation. John was in trouble much of his life for a supposedly gentle man. What's the surprise? He was a son of thunder. In one of his letters, it seems like even that perhaps he'd been asked not to attend services anymore. Can you imagine doing that to the Apostle John? It seemed like he trained people, Irenaeus and Polycarp, for the next generation of Christians. And they held to some of the teachings that we still know, which includes the Sabbath and the holy days and other things. We think that he lived to be a ripe old age, and he did most of his writing in his ripe old age. And Peter didn't actually read what he wrote. So they went on to build the church that we're still a part of today. And we've never met Peter and John, but we still need to thank them for what they did together. And sometimes I wonder if John didn't live to be a ripe old age because maybe Jesus said to God the Father, you know, it does me good to have him around. And you think, well, what good would it do a spiritual God to have a human friend? Well, God had friends on earth. The Bible's full of them. I mean, he loved coming down and walking with his friends, with Enoch and Abraham and Jacob and other people. You know, he spent time with Elijah, Moses. God had friends. And I sometimes think Jesus would say, maybe just a few more years. And John lived to an embarrassing old age. And that's where that reputation got started, where he said he wouldn't die. And it looked like there was reason to think that. That's the reason for that rumor. Well, in the world tomorrow, you'll get a chance, as we did yesterday, to sit down with these two men and with Peter's wife, maybe. I mean, maybe she'll be part of that, and many more people. And you'll get to hear these stories from their standpoint. And you think, I don't know, there's going to be a lot of people there. I don't think I can get a lunch date with Peter and John. Well, we'll have time. You know, if it's not that day, maybe the next week or something like that. We can do it, and we can hear their stories, and they'll speak to us. Your time will come. But for now, you've said enough. Let's stop this, and we'll be done with things, and you can go out and enjoy the fine spring day.